that. So I'm trying to remember exactly where we finished. It feels like it was so long ago. So did we discuss all the variables in terms of interrupting the creationists? So we talked about what the significance would be about Bein HaPrakim versus the middle of the paragraph. And we talked about the different definitions of Yira and Kavod that could be relevant. And we talked about the difference between initiating and responding, and why halakhically each one has its own category, and one being a clear iser, so to speak, to not respond is a clear problem, while initiating is a major mila, the Gemara says, highly recommended, but doesn't seem to have the same level of obligation. We talked about the difference between Shema and Shmona Esrei in this regard, and about Reshetta's Hezber, about the two motifs. I think we talked about all of that, and about Yaakov and Yosef and the Graz question, and all of those issues. So I think we discussed the major topics within that. I'm trying to remember exactly, but the Gemara segues into another passage which is interesting. So the Gemara asks, having established that this exists in the context of Shema, so what about in terms of other areas of halacha? So the Gemara on top of Yudalat Amud Aleph asks, or a few lines down, after having established this whole din in that context, so Ba'i Minei Achi Tana Debei Rav Chiya Mer Bechiya Bahalal Megillah Ma'u Shiasik. When it comes to somebody who's involved in Hallel or Megillah, so should he interrupt? So Miyam Rinan, as the Bach puts in, that should really be the text, should we say Kal V'chomer? Well, for sure it's true. Kriya Shema D'Raisa Posek Hallel D'Rabbanan Mibay. So when it comes to Kriya Shema, it's a mitzvah in the Torah. So Hallel, that's a mitzvah D'Rabbanan, so then presumably yes. Or should we say that since this is a Persumei Nisa mitzvah, that gives it a greater chumrah? Amalei posik ve'en b'kach klum, and the response was, yes, you should interrupt, ve'en b'kach klum. Amar Abba, Yab Mashiach, Gomer HaMasahalav, in the parak posik, in days when halal is completed, and we think we saw this when we read the first time, just the difference between Rashi and Tosus, what exactly that phrase means, but the days when we say whole halal, in between the prakim, you can interrupt the emsa parak, ain't no posek. In the middle of a parak, you don't interrupt. You have any yachid gomer emsa halal, feel the emsa parak posek. And if it's not complete halal, so then even in the middle of a chapter, in the middle of a parak, so one does interrupt. Ini v'harav bar shva ikol v'gaved ravina. So Rabbi bar shva was in front of ravina. You have any yachid gomer emsa halal, and it was one of the days when you don't say a whole halal, but a pasuk way, and he takid not interrupt. The shiny Rabbi bar shva lachashulay the ravina. So okay, he wasn't so impressed with him. So this whole setup about halal megillah versus kriyashma, so it's a little bit difficult to understand, because the assumption that if it's true by a din in our Torah, then for sure it should be true by a din in the Rabbanan. So one issue that we have with that is that it doesn't work for tefillah. Now when it comes to tefillah, so tefillah is a din in the Rabbanan, and yet we see from the very outset that tefillah is treated as more chamer than kriyashma for this purpose. And that Tosus, in the beginning of the parak, attributed to the psukim, that the drasha, the dibarta bam, on the one hand tells us that you can talk within kriyashma for justifiable reasons, but on the other hand, you also have a drasha, the dibarta bam, below betfila. That was the Gemara in Yuma, that Fites and Beis, that Tosus quotes, and therefore, two halves of the drasha, that one kriyashma, there's a hetzer interrupt, and that it doesn't apply to tefillah. So you could say, alright, so there we have a pasuk that counters the inference of the Kal V'chomer. But it is a little bit of a challenge to see why we should assume if it's true by Kriya Shema because it's deraisiness, then for sure it should be true by Drabanan when it's not the case when it comes to tefillah. Okay, that's one issue. Is it necessarily the case that Halal and Drabanan are Halal and Megillah are the Rabbanan? So that you wouldn't necessarily say is so obvious either. And so when it comes to Halal, so is Halal straight out the Rabbanan?
No.
Sorry? So the Rambam says it is, but not all the Rishonim agree. The Rambam understands, the Rambam says that Hallel is Midivrei Sofrim. Midivrei Sofrim is sometimes a little bit of a complicated term, because it sounds like it means it's the Rabbanan, but clearly the Rambam doesn't always mean that when he uses that term Divrei Sofrim, that some things have been Drabbanan purely. It sounds like what he means, the way it's developed, is that anything that needs Chazal's help in order to convey the halacha to us is called Midivrei Sofrim. So that could extend into even halachas that are Manat Torah, but if the drasha is of such a nature that we wouldn't have figured it out on our own, it's not such an explicit pasuk. So we need Chazal to explain it to us, it's also called Divrei Sofrim. So either that they are mechadish it themselves, or that they explained it. So it could be that it in the Rais is called Medivrei Sofrim. So the Ravid there attacks the Rambam, and the Ravid quotes a pasuk in Yeshaya that Kalel Hiskadish Chag, that's the mucker for the din of Hallel. So the Ravid questions the Rambam's assertion that it's Medivrei Sofrim, although he uses this pasuk from Yeshaya, which is not Chumash either. So I think we discussed a little bit the concept of a Divrei Kabbalah, that if something comes to us from Sukkim outside of Chumash, so then that's called Divrei Kabbalah. So it's a question what the status is. So some of the Nosei Kalim say in the Ravid that just because he has this pasuk doesn't actually contradict the Rambam's assertion that it's Midivrei Sofrim, either because the pasuk's not so obvious, or because it's not in Chumash, however you want to understand it. And there are some, the Reb Shlomo Mivilna has a tshuva about this, and it's tshuva of Binyan Shlomo, that say that you see from there that even if something is in a pasuk, that we don't treat it like more than a drabbanan. I think we've touched upon that in some contexts already, that if something comes from pasuk and has a status of Divrei Kabbalah, so it was machlokas, whether we, in the context of Tisha B'Av, we talk about this a little bit, that the Tari Eben and a few others maintain that we treat that like a din min Torah for all intents and purposes, because the Gemara, in a very narrow context, the Gemara has a statement, Divrei Kabbalah Kidivrei Torah Zami, and others didn't think that was necessarily the case, that it was only in that context, and that we don't treat it like a Chumrah of a Deraisa. So some say, oh, you see here that Hallel is not treated like a Deraisa, even though there is this pasuk in Yeshaya that shows you that it's not the way we treat Divrei Kabbalah. The Ramban understands that it depends what Hallel we're talking about. The Hallel on Yantif is a Hallel of Simchas Yantif. So that is a Deraisa. While a Hallel on, let's say, Chanukah Purim is Midin Hershimenisa. And that's a din drabbanan, and that's what we're talking about here. It maybe depends what kind of Hallel we're dealing with. Tosus, without getting into it because it's so long, Tosus gets into the point here that Hallel on Rosh Chodesh is a minik, which is why we say half Hallel, and which is why also it's machlokes whether to make a bracha on it, because the whole discussion whether you should make a bracha on a minik or not, the whole notion that we can make a bracha on a mitzvah drabbanan, that we're comfortable saying Asher Kedushanu B'mitzvosa V'tzivanu, even on something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't directly command. He commanded through his emissaries, so to speak, through the Rabbanan, and we still call that Asher Kedushanu B'mitzvosa V'tzivanu. Alright, so that much we can handle, but could we extend it even to a minig, which is less exactly accurate to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly commanded it? So that was my focus, the Rambam and others maintaining that you don't say Hallel on, say Bracha, excuse me, on Hallel on Rosh Chodesh because it's a minig. So what do we mean we say that Hallel is Drabbanan? So it's a little bit of a question what exactly we're talking about. And so too, once we get to this whole Divrei Kabbalah question, so then calling Megillah Drabbanan is also a little bit unclear, because Megillah Esther is also Divrei Kabbalah. So then maybe we should say that Megillah Esther is also really treated like a Daraisa. So this whole transition to say, well, Kriya Shema is Daraisa, Hallel is Drabbanan, so maybe we don't necessarily think Hallel is Megillah is Drabbanan. Maybe Megillah is also treated like a Din Min HaTorah. So to that you could respond two ways. You could say either in the Hanami, this again shows you that there is no such equation, that Divrei Kabbalah is treated like Divrei Torah, that this shows you we treat it like a Drabbanan. Or you could say that maybe this Gemara is talking about Megillah at night, at Notav Yehuda has a tshuva, where he explains that even if we assume that there's a chumrah to Kriyas Megillah that is treated like more than a normal din d'rabbanan, that's during the daytime. That there isn't any indication from Megillah Esther that we read the Megillah twice. And so our practice to read the Megillah at night and during the daytime, maybe they're not both an obligation to Midivrei Kabbalah. Maybe only reading in the morning is Midivrei Kabbalah. That was a whole discussion. The Binyan Shlomo, we mentioned a minute ago, the Binyan Shlomo asserted that in the time of the Mishnah, if you look through the Mishnayos and Megillah, they don't seem to ever talk about a situation where you're reading Megillah at night. And the Binyan Shlomo suggested that our practice of reading Megillah at night is not only a Drabbanan, but it's a late Drabbanan. It's a post Mishnaic Drabbanan. And that in the time of the Mishnah, they only read the Megillah on Purim in the morning. Nowadays, it's a nighttime reading that's more popular. Sociologically, more people come for the nighttime reading, but halakhically, it's almost universally agreed that the daytime reading is more important, halakhically. And it could be there's a very big difference. It could be that the daytime reading is the one that's Midivrei Kabbalah, is the one that was ordained directly by the Pasuk in Megillas Esther itself. And the nighttime reading is on a lower level. It's a straight-out Drabbanan. Maybe a late Drabbanan. It's a whole discussion. So when this Gemara treats Kriyas Megillah as Drabbanan, so you could say one of two ways. Either that we treat it like a Drabbanan regardless of its source in Esther, and it shows you that Divrei Kabbalah doesn't have any special status. Or maybe it's talking about Megillah reading at night, and maybe that has a lower level of Chumrah.
If a person has a personal nais, mm-hmm. They have a chiv to say halal at that place. Would that be the same darabana, or is it maybe a daraisa?
So it's an interesting question. Also, so that chiv halal, presume nisa, or is that a hodah on nais, which may be a different thing? It's also a good question when you talk about halal on nais. You know, is it daraisa? So that's also a possibility, which would throw this into confusion as well. The chiv and the chsam sofer assume that at least on some level, that the obligation to give a hodah when there has been an nais is a obligation from the Torah. So you have to figure out exactly how that fits in this case here as well, because here the Gemara clearly is talking about a presuming nais situation and yet calling it Drabbanan. So I think the Nesiv understood that the Chiyuv is only the first year, and then after that maybe it's not a Chiyuv on the Torah. The Chsam Sofer is a Tshuva where it sounds like halal on Chanukah always has a level of daraisa to it. So I have to figure out exactly how that.
Couldn't you say that chiyuv is a daraisa, but that I like the source of mitzvah?
Yes, that's possible, right? Something along those lines, right? Somehow there is an obligation to do something, but this specific act maybe doesn't have that same status. It's possible. Hi.
So, if it was a later institution of the nighttime reading, why would it seems like you're forcing it? That's what the Gemara is talking about here.
Which part?
This is referring to Megillah at night. If Megillah at night was a later.
Well, by the time you get to the Gemara, they clearly do talk about reading at night.
Right, but I mean, if it's clearly there's a difference between the daytime reading and nighttime reading.
So the Gemara should explain it.
Say
what we're talking about.
Right.
Yeah, I hear that. It's just saying something that seems to say the more likely reading is that it's talking about any Megillah reading, which is always treated like a Drabbanan.
Right.
Yeah, I hear that. So it's also interesting that here, the Gemara, this is one of the few explicit references in the Gemara to the idea that if we should assume that something is Drabbanan, nonetheless, it could be intensified by being Pirsumei Nisa. Right, so the halacha, we have such an idea that Pirsumei Nisa gives a mitzvah to greater chumrah, which in the halachic codes perhaps is represented most clearly by a statement in the context of Hilchos Chanukah, that the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch maintain that if somebody is not able to afford Neres Chanukah, so then he doesn't get off the hook so easy, but rather we say Shol al Tzachim Umocher is Ksuso, that he should go knocking on the doors and he should sell his clothes, he should do whatever he has to in order to be able to afford Neres Chanukah. And this is a striking concept, because normally we have a rule, Hamavazve Zal Yavazve Zosu Michomesh. So let's say somebody can't afford Tefillin. Tefillin is a mitzvah in our Torah. let's say it's Sukkot time and a person can't afford a lulav and esrog. It's going to cost him all his money. So we assume he's pater. And so the Gemara says in Ksubis that one should only spend the maximum of 1/5 of his money on staka. And the Ramah extends that to all positive mitzvahs, at least. To perform a positive mitzvah, you have to only spend a maximum of 1/5 of your money. So it's strange. So when it comes to tefillin as a mitzvah d'oraisa, or lulav and esrog, which is a mitzvah d'oraisa, and one which is going to pass if you don't deal with it soon, still you have this limit of 1/5. But when it comes to Hanukkah, it's a din d'rabbanan. Here the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch are saying you have to go to great lengths. The person that clearly is not able to afford it nonetheless has to really extend himself to be able to perform this mitzvah. So why is that? So as the Nosei Kelim explained, it's because you have this din that Pirsumei Nisa intensifies things. Pirsumei Nisa gives this greater level of chumrah that isn't ordinarily there, and even takes the Rabbanan and makes it treated for practical purposes more intensely than a din minat Torah. So how do we know that? So we know that because it's a Mishnah, so not as explicit as this, maybe it is, but the Mishnah in the first Mishnah, the 10th parak of Pesachim, first Mishnah in Arvei Pesachim. So the Mishnah says that filo ani lokeach mina tamchui lo yuschus lo midal lekosel shoyayin. Right? If you have somebody who is getting his money from welfare, you can't afford food, and he's getting his food from the communal till. So when he's taking money for food, he should also ask for dalakosos. He shouldn't say, I can't afford dalakosos, I'm pater, but he should take from staka for dalakosos as well. That's the famous story you probably heard, they'll teach you in the rabbi school, about the woman who came to the Beis Halevi, and she said that she's not sure, she can't afford wine for the dalakosos, so she wants to know if she could use milk. Which wasn't such a crazy idea. The Gemara says that milk makes you drowsy, so it's a little bit like wine in the sense that it's somewhat intoxicating. Nowadays, you tell a teenager that milk and wine have what in common, it's not really going to go over so well. But theoretically, the Gemara says there is what to compare them. So she had a basis to ask this question that maybe we should be able to use milk instead of wine. So the Salevi said to her, no, you have to use wine. And you should take from staka. That's what the Mishnah says. Well, you're supposed to loan me dollars, so I will give you from staka to pay for the wine. And he reached into his wallet and he gave her much more money than the cost of wine. So why do you do that? Why do you give her more? Because the
Talmud has no flesh,
exactly, right? Because they teach you in rabbi school to be able to know the question that's not being asked, right? So here she's asking if she can use milk, so it's clear that it's not only wine that she has trouble affording, but it's meat too. She doesn't have any meat, so therefore she's asking if she can use milk. So the Beis Halevi perceived what exactly was missing there. So this is all a reflection of this idea that you have to ask from staka for dalakosos. Apparently, it's not so explicit here, it's a little bit more explicit here in our Gemara, that that's because Pirsumei Nisa creates this chumrah, which is what our Gemara here says, that on the one hand, it's Rabban, on the other hand, Pirsumei Nisa, so that makes something more intense. The problem is it doesn't really answer the question, in the context of, let's say, the Hanukkah candles question. So to say, well, it's Pirsumei Nisa, so that doesn't answer the question, it just recategorizes the question. So we were asking, well, it's Drabbanan, and why should it be treated more stringently than a Daraisa? So to say, well, it's Pirsumei Nisa, so we just put it in the category. So the Pirsumei Nisa is, let's say, Hanukkah candles and dalakosos and Kriyas and Megillah. So those are all still Drabbanan. So we didn't answer the question, we just kind of shuffled into a different drawer. So what makes Pirsumei Nisa more chamer? What's our Gemara saying over here? So there are a number of explanations as to what it is that makes Pirsumei Nisa more intense. Rav Schechter is quoted from Rav Soloveitchik that the idea of Pirsumei Nisa is that it's a type of tefillah. You know, what does that mean, we have to publicize a miracle? Why are we publicizing a miracle? So he thought it was a type of tefillah that we're saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, remember, you did miracles for us in the past. Well, we like miracles. We wouldn't mind some more miracles. So if that's the idea, if it's a tefillah, so then it's a little bit incongruous to say, listen, Akash Baruch Hu, we want you to go outside your budget, so to speak. Normally, Akash Baruch Hu runs the world al pi derech hateva. So here we're saying, we want you to go outside the budget and to act for us miraculously. And in order to make that point, we have allocated exactly 19.9% of our budget, not 1 cent over. So that doesn't really go over so well. If the idea is you want Akash Baruch Hu to go above and beyond, so we have to make a little more of a dramatic display. We can't suffice with the normal limits and the normal exemptions that we would have. We have to really make a big effort to display what it is we're trying to ask for here. That's one explanation. Yavne Nezer had a different way of seeing things. Yavne Nezer has a tshuva in Hilchos Chanukah where he explains that the idea of Prisma Nisa being more stringent, so it actually ties in to this whole idea we've been talking about, not intentionally, so to speak, but it also happens to share a common principle. Right, so this idea of interrupting in the middle of Kriya Shema in general, right, so we said that, we mentioned how Shechtim and Harav tied this into Avraham Avinu interrupting in the context of the guests that he felt were human guests when he was visiting with, when Akash Baruch Hu was visiting with him. So Avraham left God in order to go welcome the angels who we thought were people. So that could be the marker for this idea of interrupting Kriya Shema to be mechabed human beings. But why should you do that? So I think we mentioned that there are those who understand that this is a yisod in general. That even though we say osik b'mitzvah patim in a mitzvah, that if somebody is involved in a mitzvah, so we don't expect them to stop that mitzvah and do something else. But a lot of achronim think that that's only true if they're both mitzvahs ben adam l'makom. So you're doing a mitzvah ben adam l'makom, another one comes along, so you don't interrupt the first one for the second one. But if the second mitzvah that comes along is a mitzvah ben adam l'chaver, or you have somebody who's about to collapse, who's coming and asking for tzedakah, or you think you have these visitors who are passing your tent, who are going to faint if somebody doesn't come take them in, so then that you do interrupt for. That you would make a difference. So why should that be? So apparently because when you're dealing with human beings, they're not going to be able to say, I know your thoughts are in the right place. I know your heart is in the right place. So Kosh Baruch Hu can say it's the thought that counts. He can say, all right, so I know you can't be two places at once, so I can credit you with both mitzvahs. But the person is going to collapse because he needs food. So he's not going to say, well, I know you want to help me, but you can't, so it's okay. So that's the yisod by mitzvahs ben adam l'chaveru. So the Avnei Nezer understood that that's true by Prisma Nisa as well, because Prisma Nisa is a way of communicating with other people. But that's the gedder of the mitzvah. The whole mitzvah, even though it's not really a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveru in a normal sense, it's not something you do to help out another person, but it is something that requires communicating with someone else. So you can't say that, well, if I tried my best, but I'm not able to, it's as if I did it. So Yadid Ezer explains, when it comes to saying you don't have to spend more than a fifth of your money for tefillin, what's that about? That's halacha of onus rachmana patre. That means that Akash Baruch Hu lets you off the hook if it's impossible. So the Gemara tells us that if it costs more than a fifth of your money, it's essentially impossible. You can't afford it. So okay, God says, I know you want to do it, I'll let you off the hook. But when it comes to Hanukkah candles, so how's it going to work? So you're not going to put up Hanukkah candles because you can't afford them. So somebody will pass by your house and will say, well, I don't see any Hanukkah candles, but I assume that he would want to put them up, but he can't afford them, so I'll tell myself about the miracle. Doesn't work. If you have to actually communicate with somebody, so then you have to actually do it. It has to actually happen in order for it to work. There's no concept of onus rachmana patre. So that's one of the explanations you can have as to what Prisma Nisa has that's different. Now Prisma Nisa is still a dindur rabbanim for the most part, the mitzvos that are involved in Prisma Nisa. But the intensity comes from the fact that there's a need to actually get it done, as opposed to deraisas, where often it's the case that Akash Baruch Hu can credit you as if you did it. So this could explain, for example, also we have in Hilchos Purim, so there is an idea The Mishnah says in Daf Gimel and Megillah that Mevavlin Avoda Mishum Mikra Megillah. There are certain things that we push off for the purpose of Mikra Megillah. Megillah takes priority over other things. So one of the things that we push off from Megillah is the Avoda. So the Rishonim say, what does that mean, you push off the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash from the Megillah? So most of the Rishonim say it has to mean that we're going to do the Megillah before the Avoda. Normally you do the Avoda first thing in the morning, and on Purim morning you'll do the Megillah first. And that's such a big deal because the priority of doing the Avoda before anything else is so important. To push it off is really a dramatic thing. So we have this apparently overinflated language of mevatlan, as if we were negating, as if we were mevatl the avoda in order to do the Megillah, when really we're not being mevatl it. We're going to do it, we're just going to do it later. But these Rishonim say, let's say if you really had to choose, you could only do one, for some reason you only had time to do either the avoda or the Megillah, so then most Rishonim say, so then you do the avoda, because the avoda is a mitzvah d'oraisa and the Megillah is a mitzvah d'rabbanan. So even though the Mishnah sounds like it means Mevatlan Avoda, sounds like it means if you had to choose, you were going to skip the Avoda, so most Rishonim say it can't mean that. The Avoda is derais, the Megillah is Rabbanan, so it must mean that you're going to for sure do the Avoda if you had to choose one. It just means to do the Megillah first. But there is a minority view in the Rishonim that says, no, it means what it sounds like. What does the Mishnah sound like? It sounds like if you could only do one, you'll skip the Avoda and you'll do the Megillah. How could you explain that? If you say Megillah is Rabbanan, the Avoda is Taraisa. So the Taz says, oh, you see, Megillah is Taraisa. Divrei Kabbalah is treated like Divrei Torah. But you could say like this. You could say that, no, that Megillah is Rabbanan, but it's Pirshu Menisa. So therefore what? So it doesn't mean that it's more important than the Avoda. But it means that it's less susceptible to excuses. So if you have a conflict, you can't be in two places at once, and you only have the ability to either do the Avoda or the Mikra Megillah, so technically the Avoda is more important. It's a Daraisa. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu can credit you with the Avoda. You can say, okay, you can't be in two places at once, so onus Rachmana Patra. But Megillah, you can't get credit for, because Megillah's Pirshu Menisa has to actually take place. It has to actually happen in order for it to have any effect. So therefore, maybe you could sustain such a psak and say that Megillah wins, not because it's more important, but because it's essentially more urgent. You know, Stephen Covey just passed away a few weeks ago, the author of Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and he talks about, in his book, about how you make decisions. Sometimes something is more important, and sometimes it's not more important, but it's more urgent. So you have a ringing telephone. So let's say you have to choice between learning the daf or answering the phone. So what's more important? So learning the daf is more important. But the phone is more urgent, you feel, because if you wait a minute, the phone's not going to be ringing anymore. So your only opportunity to answer the phone is now. So you're going to answer the phone, or you might choose to answer the phone, instead of continuing the daf. If you choose to do so, you're doing so not because the phone is more important, but because it's more urgent. So it's not necessarily the right call. It's explaining why sometimes when you prioritize things, not necessarily because of importance, it's because of other factors that make you prioritize things. So here too, so it might be that Pirshu Menisa makes something more urgent in a sense, that is, you just don't have a makeup option. Well, when it comes to the Daraisa, so there's an excuse that would apply that's not going to apply in the case of Pirshu Menisa. So you could have thought that maybe, so Halo and Rabbanan, Halo and Megillah have this extra Chumrah Pirshu Menisa. Well, I remember when we talked about this Hefsek and Kriya Shema, if I mentioned the application that was suggested to Moshe Rabbeinu, did I mention this? So a few weeks ago we read Parshas Vaschanan. And it's in the beginning of Vaschanan, we know that Moshe Rabbeinu is davening so hard he should be able to go into Eretz Yisrael, and he's kept out of the land, and he's praying like crazy that that should be changed. So on an emotional level we understand why, we understand what was going on there, but the Gemara in Sota and Daf Yadala, the Gemara assumes that there's something more halachic that's at stake there, and the Gemara says that why was he so concerned about going into Eretz Yisrael? You think that he's looking for the shawarma, he's looking for the ragalach, but that's so important to him. No, it's not that. It's that he wanted to do the mitzvah hatzlius baretz. So it's a halachic reason. So once you want to say it like that, so the svarim ask, well, look, onus rachmana patre, so emlecha onus gadol mizah. So here, Kadosh Baruch Hu is not letting you in the land. So he's got the greatest doctor's note in the world. So even though no one's going to ever have a time on him that he wasn't in fulfillment of mitzvah hatzlius baretz, he is being kept out by Kadosh Baruch Hu. So then that's the whole story. So I still think in the Sefer Paras Yosef HaChadash, the contemporary Sefer, there's an earlier Sefer Paras Yosef on Rishish Mos Vayikra, where he's Malakit from all over the place. So never published on Bamidbar and Varam. So it's a contemporary, very, very prolific Machaber by David Mandelbaum, who wrote on Bamidbar and Varam. So in the Paras Yosef HaChadash, the new Paras Yosef, the style of the old Paras Yosef. So in his Paras Yosef on Vesfanans, I think he quotes from this same Chuvas Avnezer that we mentioned a few minutes ago. So it's just like we see the Avnezer says in Hilchos Chanukah that for Simenisa you can't rely on any excuses, it has to actually happen. So in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, for him every mitzvah was a bit of a machavero in that sense, because a normal person, so he has different kinds of mitzvahs. But Moshe Rabbeinu is the teacher of Klal Yisrael, he felt that it was crucial, he had to perform every mitzvah, he had to actually do every mitzvah in order to teach it. So therefore, by him, every mitzvah was a person minisa, so he felt he has to actually perform it in order for it to work. So that was why he felt he couldn't rely on any onus rachmana patria. So here the Gemara has this idea that person minisa is a intensifier, and he is, I think this Gemara in a sense is really the mucker for it, even though the Mishnah in Psachim is really the mucker that you have to ask for tzedakah for dalikosis, and then you can extrapolate to other persimonisa mitzvahs, but the statement that persimonisa is given greater chumrah really comes from this Gemara here, that you might think that that should make Hallel and Megillah treated more chumrah than Kriyashma. But the Maskana, it says no, the Maskana with Kriyashma is still the model, and you're mastic for Kriyashma and you're mastic for Hallel and Megillah as well. Which, based on what we've been saying this morning, we can understand, because yes, so Hallel and Megillah, maybe they're intensified that you have to make sure to do it. But it doesn't mean that the rules are always going to be more stringent internally. To say that once you have to do it, that you can't interrupt, maybe there's no hechrach to say that. Okay, we could still say that it could be derived from Kriyashma. It's not more chamer than Kriyashma in terms of its internal rules. It's only more chamer in the sense that you have to make sure to say it. Okay, so you'll say it, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you can't interrupt for Shema, for greetings, or to interrupt now for davening. So that basically we will say about this passage. What I do want to address also is what this passage has to do with the next passage. So God willing, Friday morning, we'll pick up on that. Everyone should have a wonderful day. The only good things.